are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Frustrating, you know, just getting off the phone with the league office. They blew the call, and man, there are a lot of opportunities, though, but that call puts in first and 10. We're on an E3 plays, and it's a game-changing call. That's where it's at, so it's disappointing. Credit the Rams. They made enough plays, though. They won the game. The kicker made some big kicks, but for a call like that not to be made, man, it's just hard to swallow, and then to get a phone call.
Sean, what explanation did you get?
It was simple. They blew the call. They said it should never have not been a call. They said not only was it interference, it was helmet to helmet. There were two calls. They couldn't believe it.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here with you on this Monday edition of the program. You just heard from coach of the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton, talking about the non-call, which is going to blow up every talk radio show, I'm sure, for the next 2 weeks, mixed in with some Super Bowl previews because the Super Bowl 53 teams are set. So we're going to get into some of the action from the NFL Sunday and the AFC and NFC championship games. Look a little bit at Super Bowl 53 as it is set up with the Rams and the Patriots. We're going to talk a little bit about some prospects from the Shrine game this week, and then we'll see if we have time to maybe dip into the mailbag and take a couple of questions there at the end of the program. Of course, it's always best to rate and review as well as subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on iTunes. You can find this show on Spotify. You can find this show and all of the Locked On Podcast Network shows just about everywhere. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can always email the show lockedon49ers@gmail.com. And those are the best ways to get involved in the mailbag segments. We'll see if we have time to get into any of those questions. I've got, a queue of questions that grows faster than I can answer them every week. But I love it. Keep them coming. And we'll definitely be diving into that multiple times per week throughout the offseason, as well on Wednesday with Mr. Nick Winkler. Probably just do an entire show of mailbag questions on Tuesday, and then hopefully have a guest for you on Thursday. A little programming note, I'm going out of town for my birthday this coming weekend, so I don't know how that's going to look as far as the Monday podcast goes. There might not be one there, but we'll see how that works out with my travels and everything. But we should get four shows for you this week, and we'll see what happens. Maybe three shows next week, since I'll be traveling around into the snowy regions of California. Where to begin? Let's start with the game that's freshest in my memory, the late game. New England Patriots advance over the Kansas City Chiefs 37-31 in overtime. Really some premier matchups here with the quarterbacks, which was fun, and obviously some good football teams. They were the 1 and 2 seeds in the AFC and the NFC. Brady Mahomes was an awesome matchup, and in both games there was really ebb and flows where teams didn't feel like they were clicking, and then all of a sudden, like at the end of this game, Brady couldn't miss. He was converting every third down in the fourth quarter and in overtime, just peppering his guys, you know, the guys that you would expect, Edelman and Gronk late in that game, just over and over again, over and over again, and the Chiefs had no answer. But before that, it was a heavy dose of the ground game early for New England. Sony Michel ended up with 113 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns. Rex Burkhead had 2 scores. He got stuffed on 1 fourth down, which was a massive stop for the Chiefs, and you thought they had that momentum late, and they just could not hold Brady from scoring in the fourth quarter and in overtime. And, obviously Burkhead had the game winner. He had the late fourth quarter touchdown and then the game winner from 2 yards out in overtime. But really the thing that made this game the most fun was how weird it was with, especially coming off of that Saints game and the no-call pass interference penalty. And then in this game, you just held your breath every time there was a weird play or, everyone talking about the Patriots' magic and getting all the calls and things like that. But the Edelman, he almost Kyle Williams'd it. He almost Kyle Williams'd the game away for the Patriots. But, and I think they got the call right, but I don't know if they had proper evidence to overturn the call in the field, which was a fumble. And I don't know what Edel, he's a veteran guy. I don't know what the hell he's thinking, getting in front of a ball, a punt that's bouncing funny toward you. And one view, it looked like it would have hit his thumb, and then they showed the other angle, and the ball never touched that thumb. And then the same thing on the left side. It was this weird optical illusion when you saw the side angle. It looked like the ball had hit the thumb, and then they'd show the front side and the other side, and you could see that the ball did not. So I think they had I don't know if they had enough evidence to overturn it, but if I had to bet, I think they got it right, and the ball did somehow skip past him without hitting his fingers. And when that was announced, Arrowhead Stadium lost their minds. But then the very next play, it all ended up not being a huge deal because Kansas City got their turnover on a ball that went off of, guess who, Edelman's hands. And that led to the Chiefs being able to tie up that game and send it into overtime. So a couple of very fun games going into overtime. But, man, you just can't count out Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. They're too damn good. It's crazy, man. Nine Super Bowl appearances for those guys. Three in a row now for the Patriots. Man, and I got to say, one of the biggest things here, and by the way, Mike McGlinchey of the 49ers chiming in during this game on Twitter saying that roughing penalty was the softest call of all time. I believe it was Dee Ford hitting Brady almost kind of by the head, neck area, but just barely, trying to get to him and knock the ball out and trying to get to the quarterback. I agree. That's a soft call. And that's what's crazy. We'll get to that. We'll get to the no call in the Saints game. But that's what's crazy about all this is the NFL has become so over-officiated. And everybody's looking around at the end of every play for a flag. For there to be such a penalty that that is obvious that doesn't get the flag. That's why that's so crazy. But more on that later. Dee Ford lining up in the neutral zone. Dee Ford, what are you doing? Future 49er pass rusher Dee Ford, get this stuff out of your system before the 49ers overpay for you in free agency for those pass rush skills that weren't able to get to the quarterback in this game. But man, lining up offsides on a play that the Chiefs intercept Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game, unreal. Unreal. So many big plays that swung these two games one way or the other. And the home teams had won the last, 10 championship games? Something like that. And then both away teams win in this. Both games in overtime. It was a crazy Sunday of football. But speaking of Dee Ford, is Trent Brown the real MVP here? Tom Brady sacked 0 times. Pat Mahomes got sacked 4 times. Tom Brady got sacked 0 times. And it was that Chiefs front, which is what I thought might be the X factor for the Chiefs, playing at home, and we saw the pass rush last week. They have two awesome edge pass rushers in Dee Ford and Justin Houston. They got Chris Jones inside. They can get after the quarterback. They might have some problems in the back seven, but that front four can get after the quarterback, and they did not do that in this game. Trent Brown and the rest of the Patriots' offensive line kept Brady clean. A lot of that is on Brady getting rid of the ball on time, just sliding up in the pocket. He's not a great athlete. We know that, but he's got good feet, and he feels it, and he's so good in the pocket. Oh, man, it was crazy. They could not get to Tom Brady, and I think that really, you know, all these big plays and crazy penalties and reviews and stuff, I think that's really the key to this game. Brady kept clean. They could not get home. So Trent Brown, I think So Mike McGlinchey and Trent Brown, they're always going to be linked because of that trade and the 49ers trading away Trent Brown and then drafting Mike McGlinchey. Or it happened the other way around, but I'm sure they had that trade figured out before. And if Mike McGlinchey was still there in the draft, then that's what triggered the overnight trade after the first round. After they took McGlinchey, they traded Trent Brown to the Patriots for a third rounder. And I remember at the time thinking, man, I don't know. I think I would rather have Trent Brown in a first rounder than Mike McGlinchey in a third rounder. And when you see how good of a pass blocker Trent Brown is, that's why. But Trent Brown obviously wasn't a fit for the 49ers scheme. We saw how good Mike McGlinchey was in the scheme, especially as a run blocker. Young guy, he's got all the talent in the world, looks to be a long-term piece for the 49ers. So great draft pick. I mean, they hit on that. I'm definitely not saying that. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out going forward. But I think the Patriots are definitely happy with their end, even though they've got to pay Trent Brown now because he only had that 1 year left on his rookie deal. But to give up a third rounder to get a really good pass blocking offensive tackle, a guy who's just stepped in when Nate Solder left and manned the left side. Tom Brady's blind side and Trent Brown doing a job over there. So he fits that scheme better than he did with the 49ers, and he's been doing a good job keeping him clean. So I think both teams are going to end up actually being happy with that trade, and that's what it's all about, right? Both teams win-win with trades, and I really love Mike McGlinchey for the 49ers, so that's all that matters in that side of the trade is they got the right player there who I think can be better in this scheme than Trent Brown was, and Trent Brown found himself a good home, and I think the Patriots are happy as well. All right, let's step aside, take a quick break here, talk about that NFC Championship game, talk a little bit about some Shrine Game prospects. I think if you just ranked all four quarterbacks and you asked 100 football fans that were neutral to rank the four quarterbacks that were in the AFC and NFC championship games, I think 99% of them would come back with Jared Goff as the fourth best quarterback. And I think that's warranted, even though Jared Goff's had a great couple of years under Sean McVay. But it's Jared Goff. He's the guy advancing going into the Superdome in New Orleans, which is such a hard place to play, and knocking off the Saints. The Rams, man, down early? You thought that game was over. I thought that game was over because even though the Saints were kicking field goals early, they kept coming down, got the ball back again, came down, kicked another field goal, got the ball back again, scored a touchdown. They scored three times. The Rams were still off the board. And to see the Rams come back, I think, says a lot about the Rams, how good their coach. I think Goff, to face that adversity, I think that's a pretty special ability for a young quarterback. So the league's in good hands. If Mahomes would have won, everything about this would have been turning the page, right? The old guys have been slayed, and it's the young quarterbacks league now, and all the good young quarterbacks that are in the NFL, and there are a lot of them now, and hopefully Jimmy Garoppolo is a part of that group of young quarterbacks that goes on to win some things for the 49ers. But right now, Jared Goff is the guy. He's playing in the Super Bowl. Now, debatable on whether or not he should have had a chance to play in that Super Bowl with the no call. And I got to shout out my guy, Ryan Covey, who I join every Friday night at 11 p.m. on KNBR 680, the sports leader. He does KNBR tonight from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. every night. And Ryan Covey on Twitter had the hashtag Blue Dat, which is a playoff of Who Dat, Blue Dat, as in Blue Dat Call. The no-call pass interference. We heard from Sean Payton, Saints head coach, at the top of the show. What about the guy involved in that play? The guy who did the offending that did not get flagged, Nickell Robey-Coleman. What do you have to say about that play?
Hey, Saints fans, I'm sorry, but it is what it is. You heard what the ref said. The ref said it was incomplete. Respect the call.
That's got to just sting. You can't get over that. I don't think Saints fans will ever get over that. I know a lot of 49ers fans were bringing up the back-to-back-to-back years of heartbreak. There was the Sherman NFC Championship game, batting the ball away that was headed for Michael Crabtree. There was obviously 5 yards away from winning a Super Bowl, and there was the Kyle Williams. Oh, the Kyle Williams game. 3 years in a row, the 49ers could have been Super Bowl champions. Saints have had a couple of bad beats in two back-to-back years, and it's going to take a long time for them to get over that. And then you hear Nickell Robey-Coleman over here just having fun. Hey, you got to respect the call. I love that quote. It's such a great quote. And it would be even funnier if it wasn't for the stinky, dirty Los Angeles Rams that were going to the Super Bowl, NFC West rivals, that I'm sure was also extra frustrating for 49ers fans. It was frustrating for me watching the game, kind of rooting for the Saints to win anyways, but the Saints were also, if you listen to the show, you know the Saints were my preseason pick. So I was hoping my preseason pick was going to do good for me and make me look good and go win the Super Bowl, but the Saints are not going. It's going to be the Rams. They're going to be facing the New England Patriots. Probably the least favorite outcome for most 49ers fans and most people I know and talk to, and just gauging by what I saw on Twitter, I think most people were really excited for Saints-Chiefs, and most people just already hate the Patriots anyways, and most 49ers fans on my timeline hate the Rams, so there you go. And extra points for honesty, because there was the quote later to somebody else, I'm not sure who Roby Coleman was talking to when he dropped this quote, but he said, yes, I got there too early. I was beat, and I was trying to save the touchdown, and I whacked his ass. So, yeah, Nickell Roby Coleman knows he got away with something, but I didn't realize he was such a quote machine. Man, and extra points for honesty there. But obviously, you know, what can you do? It can't help the Saints now. They may even change the entire landscape. The entire rules might change because of something like this. And people brought to my attention the Jerry Rice fumble, non-fumble from way back against the Green Bay Packers that set up the catch two and the TO catch. And, you know, there's some similarities with this play because I think you just have to play it off, right? It's the confidence in which you make the play. It doesn't look weird or awkward. And Roby Coleman, he didn't go up looking for a flag and make the play look awkward and kind of like get tangled up with the dude. He just hit him like it was a normal play, acted completely nonchalant about it. And that was the Jerry Rice play. Someone posted a video, and I totally remember that. Jerry Rice goes to the ground, completely fumbles the ball. When you see the normal angle of it on the broadcast, you just think he got tackled, dropped the ball, got back up, and he goes to line up. And he doesn't act like anything happened. Then you see the replay. He knows damn well that he fumbled the ball, but he plays it off so well and so confident. And then that's when replay came in. And I think this non-call could have the same impact. And we're going to see pass interference calls getting replayed next year. And I think you should, because there's so many bad ones. There's so many ticky-tack ones. And then this one was the worst of all. And such a big call and a big play like this. The game's moving so fast. The refs have so much on their plate. Even if they're really good, they're going to miss stuff. If you're going to over-officiate, you got to at least let people throw the challenge flag on that and get that kind of stuff reviewed and get stuff right. You got to get stuff right. And I would not be surprised at all if there's a rule change because of this, because it was so bad. All the ticky-tack pass interference calls that are called every game all year long that are so annoying. Then a dude gets blatantly trucked before the ball arrives. Clearly 4 yards before the ball arrives. Easiest call ever. Fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game. No call. It can't happen. It just cannot happen. Pats Rams. So the obvious storyline here is that Bay Area connection between Jared Goff and Tom Brady. Bay Area born, Niner fan bred quarterbacks. These guys, Jared Goff wears number 16 because of Joe Montana. You know Joe Montana was Tom Brady's guy growing up in the Bay Area watching the Dynasty 49ers. I mean, these guys are both cut from that Joe Montana cloth, the Joe Cool, calm, confident, accurate quarterbacks. That's the mold that both of these guys are from. So basically what I'm trying to say here is no matter who wins the Super Bowl this year, I think the 49ers deserve credit and should get a little mini Lombardi in the trophy case to go with their 5 regular-sized ones, right? New England, Los Angeles, you're welcome. You can pay it back to San Francisco for having such a great dynasty and great quarterback like Joe Montana that it sprouted your franchise quarterbacks. A quick break, then we'll be back with some Shrine Game prospects that stood out to me this week. The 49ers aren't in the Super Bowl, but they're in the Senior Bowl, which is just as fun, right? Well, I don't know. I think more fun than if they weren't in the Senior Bowl and if the 49ers coaching staff wasn't coaching the South roster of the Senior Bowl. More on the Senior Bowl this week. They're going to have weigh-ins on Tuesday, which is going to be super important for certain prospects, and go through practices Tuesday through Thursday. Then the game will be on Saturday. So we'll get into more of the Senior Bowl stuff later in the week. I want to talk a little bit about the Shrine Game. And for those of you who don't know how it usually works with the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl and the Collegiate NFLPA Bowl or whatever it's called, the postseason All-Star Bowls, usually what happens is the Shrine Game is first, and it's kind of like the day three guys, you know, the round 4, 5, 6, 7 guys, a few undrafted guys, maybe a couple guys sneak into the second day. Sometimes a couple of guys go higher than that, but usually it's the day three prospects that are mostly in the Shrine Game. Then the Senior Bowl has a little bit better prospects. Guys, you know, rounds 2, 3, 4-ish, and maybe a couple of guys sneak into round 1. Carson Wentz was the famous one a couple years ago who went to the Senior Bowl, and he had some momentum going into the game, and then teams fell in love with him there. He ended up going number 2 overall. Phillip Rivers was another famous one at the Senior Bowl that really won over the San Diego Chargers at the Senior Bowl. So that's something that teams that can really happen. And that's one of the things that's disappointing about Josh Allen not showing up to the Senior Bowl and has officially bowed out of that. So the 49ers aren't going to have a chance to coach him and fall in love with him if they maybe were thinking about taking him with the number two overall pick. And I think that hurts his chances of going number two overall. But, you know, the other guys that would go number two overall aren't at the Senior Bowl either, and Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams or whoever else. So, you know, that doesn't mean anything that they won't take him now because he dropped out of it. But it's just a little disappointing because I think that would have been an important step for Josh Allen in potentially being valuable enough to go number two overall to especially the 49ers. But more on the Senior Bowl later. Let's talk a little bit about the Shrine Game. I just want to highlight some of my favorite prospects that were in the game. I didn't have a chance to watch any of the practices, but just judging by what some of the other draft nicks around the world and draft Twitter was saying about guys that were at practice and watching the reps and all the one-on-ones and things that were happening, and then what I knew about the prospects and going back and watching some of these guys after hearing about how well they were doing in practice and then watching the Shrine Game itself, here are the guys that I am a little bit excited about from the Shrine Game. Let's start at quarterback and Brett Rypien. That name might sound familiar to you. Brett is the nephew of former NFL quarterback Mark Rypien. And he's from Boise State, and he plays like a pro quarterback. He's not the biggest, strongest guy, but I think he's that type of player that Kyle Shanahan would like and might take, you know, on day three of the draft if he thought that he wanted to move on from one of his other backup quarterbacks and end up trading, say, Nick Mullins or something like that and wanted to bring in some competition for C.J. Beathard. I think it's very unlikely that the 49ers go quarterback. I think they're going to keep all three of their quarterbacks in-house and then let Mullins and C.J. Beathard battle it out for the backup spot behind Jimmy Garoppolo and make sure that they're covered in case anything weird happens with the rehab of Jimmy Garoppolo. But Brett Rypien would be a name to watch. I think he looks like that prototype West Coast quarterback. He's not a super strong-armed guy, but just makes good decisions and can throw the ball well enough. He's about 6'1 and 3 quarters, 204 pounds. Not huge hands. He's got the small hands, Alex Smith style, smaller than Alex Smith, 9-inch hands. So not an impressive physical player, but he's just been a really good quarterback at Boise State, and he had a good week at the Shrine Game, and by all accounts was the best quarterback there, led some nice drives during the game through a touchdown pass, and I liked what I saw there as well. So Brett Rypien is one of my favorite sleeper quarterback names, might be more of a career backup type, but maybe even give you a little bit more, maybe even outplay some of the Senior Bowl quarterbacks that we're going to see next week. Nebraska running back Divine Ozigbo. He is a monster. He's a big old running back, 5'10 and a half, 219 pounds. A lot of people are talking about how the 49ers have too much finesse on offense. They need that power back, and this would be the guy this year, and you wouldn't have to spend a lot of draft capital, I don't think, on him. He didn't have a ton of production at Nebraska his first 3 years, but had a 1,000-yard year, 7 yards per carry as a senior, played really well, and man, I loved what I saw from him. I didn't really watch him at all over the course of the season, went back and watched a little bit of him and watched him in the game, and he's got good feet for such a big back. He runs with power. He runs behind his pads. He's definitely that type of running back. You know, keep that name in mind, Ozigbo. He's that guy that you're going to pick up off the waiver wire in your fantasy league, and he's going to win somebody a league someday because he's the guy that nobody drafted, and he wasn't the starter coming into the year, but there's always a number of those running backs, and I think he could definitely be one of those running backs that comes in and ends up, you know, starting some games and helps somebody out down the road late in their fantasy football season. That's the guy that I envision Divine Ozigbo being, although he's not going to be, I don't think, a super high draft pick unless he blazes at the combine. But he's got good feet, and he can run a little bit, and he's hit some long runs too, so maybe he will work out better than I think and get himself a little bit higher draft recognition. A couple of wide receivers. The guy who, by all accounts, had the best week of practice, Terry Godwin, wide receiver out of Georgia. Undersized guy, very thin, only 174 pounds at 5'11 and 3/8". But he was uncoverable by most accounts, and he's super quick and get open. He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, and Georgia just doesn't throw the ball all that much, and he had some good players playing in front of him, so he didn't put up a ton of production in college, but he might have a better pro career than a college career. And he's one of those guys built very similarly to Richie James. Might be someone that that catches Kyle Shanahan's eye because he loves those smaller, quicker wide receivers who can get open and separate a little bit. And yeah, Terry Godwin's got to show up over 180 pounds though at the combine. That's for sure. He's a very thin guy at 174 pounds, but put on a show at the Shrine Game, and he was hard to cover. Fresno State wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson. No relation to the other Keyshawn. He spells it different, K-E-E. Fresno State wide receiver, 6'1 and an eighth, 204 pounds. Got a little bit of size, a little wiry, got some length to him. Somewhat similar to Kendrick Bourne, if you want to make a size comparison. But by all accounts, he had a very good week. He had a nice career at Fresno State. He's a player. I grew up around Fresno, and so a lot of my friends are into the Fresno State program. I kind of was anti. It's like you go one way or the other, and I was like annoyed by all the Fresno State love when I was growing up nearby in Visalia, California. I don't hate Fresno State or anything, but I'm just not a huge fan of Fresno State. Like everybody. I always still find it weird that you're a huge fan of a college you didn't go to, and my college didn't have a football team. Go Gators. But anyways, Keyshawn Johnson, yeah, I like what I see from him on his film from Fresno State. And by all accounts, he had a really good week. And he's a name to remember. He's definitely another wide receiver that I think Kyle Shanahan could like. And it's always nice to have those above the 6 feet variety that he might like. He can get open. He's got really good hands. I've heard some people say they think he's got maybe the best pure hands in the class, or at least, you know, top three or four in this draft class, just pure hands. So he's got some ability to get open, a little bit of length to him, and some nice ball skills. So it's a good package for someone who you might be able to draft in the later rounds. And a couple of defenders here. One of them had just a number of good plays in one-on-ones, apparently, just people raving about his practice work during the week for the Shrine game. Daniel Wise, a defensive tackle out of Kansas, a little undersized, 6'2.5", 283 pounds. So an undersized penetrating style of defensive tackle, but maybe even a Ronald Blair type build. That's pretty close to what Ronald Blair was, I think, coming out of Appalachian State, 6'2 plus and 280, 285 pounds, something like that. So maybe someone who can move around, play a little end and play a little defensive tackle and be a penetrator. And he was tough to block all week long, and went, that's what I love some of these bowl games for too. A guy plays really great all week, and you go back and you're like, oh man, this is a guy I wasn't really watching, wasn't really looking at, and he's can make an NFL team. He's a pretty good player, and you might have overlooked him. So a lot of these players can really show up on the map in that regard in these all-star games. One more defensive back. I saw Eric Crocker first profile him before the Shrine game. And by all reports, he was pretty good during the week and a feisty player, even though he's undersized. Another guy under 180 pounds, which is not great. He's going to have to put on some weight before the combine. But Jimmy Moreland out of James Madison University, a cornerback, 5'9 and 3'8", 179 pounds. Short arms, 29.5. So people are not going to like his size and not like the way that he measures up with a lot of other defensive backs out there, but he's a feisty player. He plays big, and he's probably going to go late, even though his production and his ability might say that he should be, you know, a fifth round pick. He might be someone that, goes even later than that, seventh round or even undrafted free agent just because he's so small. But he'll probably blaze, because when you are small like that, you better blaze. And if he runs slow, then he's definitely screwed and going undrafted. But Jimmy Moreland is another guy I like. I'm always interested when Eric Crocker points out a defensive back that he likes and likes the technique and likes the way they play. And so I'm watching Jimmy Moreland, even though he's maybe a little bit of an underdog just because he's undersized. And for that, we'll probably be pigeonholed as just a slot cornerback. And that's one of the things that stands out when you watch the Shrine game. And I saw the guys in the huddle, and as they line up on the field during the game, and you see the collection of players, and it's the first college football I've seen since the national championship game, and they're just smaller. That's one of the big reasons why these guys are day three guys, and the Senior Bowl guys are day two guys. It's just pure size, height, weight, speed. Some of these guys don't add up, even though there's some ballers out there. And that doesn't mean they're not going to be great pros. It just means their stock is not going to be as high because they don't check off as many boxes as the guys we'll see next week in the Senior Bowl. It looks like we're out of time here, so that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thanks everybody for listening. Be back tomorrow with a full mailbag episode. So keep those mailbag questions coming in to me on Twitter at BDPeacock. Or you can email lockedon49ers@gmail.com, but Twitter's the best place. It makes you have to keep questions shorter anyway, so you don't send me an entire book, which I don't mind if you send me a longer email. But I do like the quick hitters on Twitter as well. At BDPeacock is the Twitter account to follow me, and lockedon49ers@gmail.com is that email address. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.